Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith and hope is expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast at epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, a priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast that invites you to put on some very special spectacles. And if you happen to be the hare that has a spare pair, grab that spare pair, put them on, and you're going to see life through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. We call that Armadoxy, and we're inviting you to take that step, to take a look with us. This is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. We're just happy that you're with us today. So, we're all in place, ready to do it. Please join me. Let's take the next step. You can tell I'm pumped up. I just watched The Hare Who Lost His Spectacles. Yeah, I hadn't seen that in a while. Oh, that was good. It is fantastic, actually, that he has a spare pair, despite what everybody's telling him. Hey, you don't have to listen to everybody. You know you have that spare pair. That is really a classic, classic video. I remember showing that to my class when I was teaching religion. That's right, I was teaching religion. I showed it at the class I used to teach at St. Gregory Hovsepian School out in Pasadena, and we showed it to our junior high class and had a discussion. Wow! You know, there's always, like, even whether they're young or they're old, you always have the same prototypes. You have the same type of people in every class and every setting, right? It's always the people that just completely goes over their head and they say, oh, what is this, cartoons? And then you got another group that kind of gets it, wants to get it, actually tries to figure out what's going on over there. And then you have the other ones that are just scared out of their mind, like, what's going on? I think even a couple of them called their parents or told their parents, if I remember right, like, oh, I don't want to watch this show anyway. Anyway, it is an interesting little story. It comes out of the Passion Play album by Jethro Tull back in 1973. I remember I was graduating high school, just starting college, and you're trying to find yourself and everything. And here comes the hare who lost his spectacle. And the moral of the story is he always had it. You go searching and you realize that the truth is within. And you kind of got to remember that, you know, all true religion points you in one direction to find that truth. And that truth is, it's always present. It's nothing that you really need to search for. Once you know it's there, then your eyes light up. But it's always been there. That's the point of it. Anyway, long story. I just stumbled on that file and I had to watch it. It has nothing to do with what we're... Well, it has everything to do with what we're talking about, but we're not going to be talking about the hare. We're going to be talking about some other things, actually. What's going on in the world? The Occupy movement? Has your city been occupied? Here in California, man, every day there's new stories coming out. We heard about the Occupy movement last night up in Oakland. That's in the Northern California area. And they had some ugly violence take place last night. We're going to be up there this coming weekend. This Sunday, I'm going to be celebrating the Divine Liturgy at the San Francisco St. John Church. Looking forward to seeing the people up there and celebrating together. Also, we get an extra hour this Sunday. Don't forget that. Yes, move your clocks back. Otherwise, you get to church and you say, where is everybody? Yes, it's that one. The one in the fall is my favorite. Now, I hate the one in the spring, where you spring forward. Then you show up at church and everybody comes late. Everybody, oh, we forgot about it. And they show up at 1 o'clock and you say, hey, folks, you shouldn't have been coming at 12 anyway. Anyway, that's just personal peeve from a priest who's been working it a little bit too long. But let's go back to the streets, okay? So the Occupy movement, it's happening everywhere. And, you know, we got to start talking about it and asking ourselves, is this just this usual distrust of the establishment? Is this time for revolution? What's going on? Is this just some fluke? We're going to be looking at that a little bit in the second portion of today's show. I want to share with you some other ideas that we've been developing. Hey, what about Compass? What about Compass? These last two episodes have been just, I mean, in the sixth episode right now? Just fascinating. I'm really enjoying that show. It's really looking at the Divine Liturgy. You know, I got to tell you this. I'm so thankful for Archbishop Schnork Kalustian and for some unnamed priest in the Eastern Diocese. These two people have single-handedly published or been responsible for most church newsletters in the latter half of the last century and whatever part of this century we've had, this last decade. What am I talking about? Have you ever noticed you pick up church newsletters? How many times have they reprinted stories from Saints and Sacraments, Archbishop Schnork Kalustian's classic book, written, I think, in the late 50s. Just a treasure. It's a Sunday school book. It's about what is religion, what is faith, who are the saints, Saint Gregory the Illuminator, Saint Vartan, what are saints and everything. And you act, it's like there is no other creativity that has taken place, because this poor man, God rest his soul, and he was just such a saintly man, this poor man's document keeps getting reprinted as if there's nothing else out there. Well, in a sense, there isn't. There isn't any other classic. There's a lot of stuff that people have written, but this is too easy. You just take it, and then you make a copy of it, and it's a cut-and-paste job, you know? And God rest his soul, Archbishop Schnork Kalustian, he was later became the Patriarch of Turkey, has put together this classic, so why not avail yourself to it? Well, one of the problems is that, you know, it's been reprinted so often, people do need a little bit more. And certainly need a lot more when you get into spirituality, right? Because basically, you know, it's nice as a Sunday school book, but as you mature, your needs change, and you need to satisfy those needs in different ways, a different language. But traditionally, I guess there's somebody in these church newsletter offices who find it very, I guess, gratifying to be able to cut and paste that. Now, the other thing that they cut and paste, it's an unknown author, but as far as it goes, I think I have traced it back to the Eastern Diocese in the United States, and it appears there quite a bit in different newsletters, and it appears in most church newsletters at some time or another, okay? It's this small do's and don'ts of church. Who knows who wrote it, but somebody has, because it hasn't changed. It still talks about, you know, these wild concepts. Like, you shouldn't chew gum in church. Okay. You shouldn't cross your legs in church. Okay. As far as I know, I think in the old churches there were no seats, right? People were standing, so it'd be very difficult to cross your legs if you're standing. But still, it's in there, you know, like, do not cross your legs. Sit in your place, do not look around. Women wear hats, and men remove your hats. Now that, of course, comes from the Bible. St. Paul addressing a group of people, telling them about church etiquette back in those times too, okay? And this is the extent of what we learn. Now, here's a little secret. Now, you see that in the church newsletters. Guess what? That has been reprinted in the parish council manual. Not only Armenian churches, all Armenian churches have this in the parish council manual, the do's and don'ts. Like, as a parish council person, this is your responsibility to go out there and and be the police, be the church police. So that if that hemline's a little bit high, maybe go over there and say, young lady, would you mind lowering the hemline? Or if that church shirt is a little bit tattered on that guy, young man, would you mind please putting on, like when you go to a nice restaurant, would you mind please putting on this overcoat? So the parish councils, in a sense, can be this church police. And in fact, I guess somebody has written about that. This appeared in one of the blogs. It was called, Church Not a Catwalk. And some guy was actually saying that, you got to police it, that at Holy Badarak, at the Holy Divine Liturgy, people should be coming in dressed in attire and everything. And guess who responded? Yes, yes, yes. From Compass fame, Linda Zadoyan responded to this and said, hey, before you start looking at that, let's try to look at the heart. Let's look elsewhere. And so she was kind of told in a rebuttal and response that no, people should be wearing things like this. Let's say, it says, a female worshiper, long, curly, and bottle blonde tresses spread like a fan well below her uncovered shoulders. Perhaps she rejected the traditional hair covering because it would have hidden her physical allures. Once in a while, in case the men had not noticed her silken locks, she would sway her big hair like a lion gently shaking his golden mane. Oh, are we getting poetic? Are we getting poetic or what? Now, you gotta wonder, somebody who's writing this, where is their attention? So, I have been so, so excited about the last two compasses. Because Linda has been the first person to take the discussion outside of these do's and don'ts. Up until now, the going to the Divine Liturgy has been about, well, you do this, you don't do that. And now she's talking about what is the redeeming value of the Divine Liturgy. If you hadn't had a chance to listen to it, it's online. Please go to apostle.net. Check out compass number 5 and 6. We do a little dialogue, a question and answer, but it actually evolves. That's what I'm excited about. There's no script. And we're just talking, and it's a candid conversation. And what happens is that you start realizing that, hey, you know what? If you understand the Divine Liturgy, if it starts speaking to your heart, then of course you're going to go there with respect, right? But if it's just a show that you're going to, well, what does it matter? What does it matter? I go to shows all the time. Maybe I'll wear jeans. Maybe I'll go barefoot. Maybe I'll wear thongs. It doesn't matter because it's just a show. And so when we start understanding that the Divine Liturgy is the celebration of the Eucharist, of God's love for us, that Jesus Christ is being distributed and yet never consumed. He is always there. The idea that Christ is alive and in our midst. Then you start approaching it with reverence. I was at a funeral this morning. They say, Asvads Herunane, may it be far away from you. I don't like talking about these, but it also gave me the material for today too, because I was going to really go in a different direction. We were going to be talking a little bit about the Occupy movement, but it gave me a unique stance on the Occupy movement. And this morning at the funeral, this is at the Pasadena church, somebody came up to me and he says, all these kids, it was somebody who had been there. Now you got to remember that the Armenian church has been in the United States for about 100 years. And so now you have this unique situation where people have built the church but not necessarily been able to use it or enjoy it. And somebody made the comment that, hey, look, so-and-so, there was somebody who was standing there, had contributed so much time and money for the building of that church. And yet his kids are nowhere to be found. And, it's a sad reality. It's a sad reality that as generations go on, one generation builds, and sometimes their kids, disappear, are not there. But when you think about it in this sense, is like, what is that church? What is that edifice? Is it something that just has these do's and don'ts? Or do you understand what's being done inside of that church? Do you understand that that shell that you have built is only a means by which God's work gets done? And so what do you expect from those children? Why would those children do basically something that was a hobby to their parents? This is not to cut down or to make be judgmental on them, but in reality, did people understand what was being done in that church? That the body and blood of Jesus Christ was being passed out? Or was it just another opportunity to get together and survive and basically give definition to the self? And this is what Armenians have struggled through in the last 100 years in the diaspora, particularly in the United States, where they've created these centers, they've created these the centers of worship, but have never worshiped there. Now, it sounds weird, doesn't it, right? But I'm talking about how many people really understood what the purpose of the church was, what was the mission of the church, aside from survival as a means of survival for a people, but to understand it as the power of God here on earth, the body of Christ here on earth, to understand that that worship, that sacred divine liturgy that was being celebrated inside was being done for a purpose, and Jesus was being distributed, that Christ was in their midst. So it's very unusual. You have a group of people, and God bless them all, because this was a generation that came after the genocide, and they said, okay, we're going to be building because we know we need that church, but didn't have the connection. So it became sort of a hobby. So you build the church, you build the AGBU, the Triple X, the Knights of Vartan, whatever little society that you have or this. And the church is one of many organizations. So that when your term expires in one, you go on to serve a term in the other place. Now, what happens is it becomes a hobby then, right? So why would you expect the children, your children, to take up your hobby? Think about it in those terms. We sometimes say, why aren't the church children going to church? Why aren't the children there at church? How do we treat that church? Is church really a place where God's love is being shared? Is church really a place where you are maximizing your potential? Or is church really a place that, well, sort of helps us out during this time to identify who we are? And it's important. Okay? Is church a place where it gives me an opportunity to work off some of my energy? And I do have energy that I want to spend in doing, you know, charitable work or some good works, okay? And so I all of a sudden forget what the purpose is. Is church a hobby? I like it because there's some good people there, you know? There are. There's usually some great people at church. I like to get together, you know, we have breakfast together. Once in a while we go out to dinner. We talk. Sometimes we go golfing, Sunday morning golfs, yeah. During the summer, we could go fishing on Sunday morning, you know. And so, what do you expect from their children? For them to take up their parents' hobby? No. I mean, if your father's hobby was stamp collecting, if your mother's hobby was playing guitar, why would you take it up? It's nice. You would take it up only if you had a sincere love for it. If your mother played the beautiful strings of that guitar and started playing with your heart and inviting you into that music, then there's possibility that you'll pick up that guitar, isn't there? If your father was so fascinated by that hobby that he lived and breathed those stamps, and there are people, there are collectors, who can tell you by just looking at just a small little side of that stamp, can tell you dates and fascinating facts about that stamp, and you become intrigued by that, of course you're going to take up that hobby. The same way with religion, with faith, with church. If we approach it as a hobby, well, why should they? Unless we're completely in it. And at that point, it doesn't become a hobby. It becomes our passion. It becomes our work. It becomes what we live for. To live and die for Christ. I think in many ways when the Gospels invite us to live and die for Christ, in many ways when the Gospel invites us to pick up our cross, it's not an invitation to go up on a cross and get nailed to it. It's not about taking a bullet for Christ. It's about giving yourself for Christ. Are you with me? Okay. How about a song? Let's break up today's podcast. Here's today's song of the day. That is off of the Windham Hills White Album. Yes, of course I'm attracted to his name, Sevag. Of course he's Norwegian. Beautiful music. And that song is called Crystal Palace, and we will definitely have it in our show notes today, a link so you could check him out, check out all of his beautiful music, and of course order these songs and CDs. They are made for you.
And when the war was over, I went dancing in the street with the corpse of my dead brother to the sacrificial beat. And the Boy Scouts and Legionnaires came home from overseas singing glory, hallelujah, to the swankiest apple.
I want to talk a little bit about the Occupy movement, which is just all over the place. You see it, and I've really held back because there's so much uncertainty about it. You don't know, is it just a fashion, or is this really people that are sincere about it? And I think the more and more we're seeing it, especially with these escalated violent the escalation of violence inside of these movements and these gatherings, it tells you that, okay, people are really getting serious about the movement and about what they mean. Not that, you know, without violence there isn't seriousness, but you're putting something out there, okay, and you're risking it. And we saw this in Los Angeles for the last several weeks. Last night in Oakland, it just blew up into violent activity. There was fire. There was all kinds of, I think people were being hit by rubber bullets by the police and so on. And it gets you to think, okay, is this really temporary insanity, so to speak? Or is this really people that are truly tired of the injustice that is being served to them? Is this really people banding together and united, saying enough is enough? And we played around with these ideas in the last few weeks as we made some comparable ties with the church and saying, you know, at what point do people say enough is enough? Now, a few minutes ago, I told you about the hobby idea, the hobby mentality of the church. Once you start understanding what the church is all about, you understand what Christ is all about. It no longer becomes a hobby, but it becomes your passion. And then at that point, you're willing to go and put yourself out on the line. In the same way, well, housing, work, job, taking care of your children, the welfare of your family, of course, these are more than hobbies. These are responsibilities. Is this people coming together, banding together and saying, enough, because I need to take care of my family? Or is this just some kind of a movement, something like, well, you hear this phrase being thrown out there, the hippies, you know? What hippies, you know? Do you understand what a hippie is, you know? But people like to label these kind of activities. Are they protesting big business? Certainly, big business should be protested. Capitalism is being protested. Hey, is capitalism not working? The great democracy here in the United States, and capitalism being the form by which it comes together, right? You had, remember, Ronald Reagan, President of the United States, identifying non-capitalist, specifically communist, the Soviet Union, as the evil empire. And you have this dichotomy of the good and the bad now. You have the Star Wars mentality. We need to protect ourselves from the evil that's coming over here. Well, a lot has been said, and I wanted to approach it in the terms of protest, because protest, those of you who have been listening to The Next Step for these past several years know that at the bottom of it, it is laced with protest. It is a protest of what we have been given and really what we deserve. That's the bottom line to The Next Step. At some point, we're saying enough is enough. You know, we as a people have been given such a beautiful opportunity to live and share in this life. God has given us this breath. And if you have any doubt about it, just take a breath. Exhale. Isn't that wild? Now, if you're dead, you can't do that. That breath is connected with your life. I'm serious about that. Think about it. If you're dead, you can't take that breath. So that breath is connected with your life, and that is the gift that has been given to you by God. So if that gift has been given to you, why are we hampering it with all the clutter? And so the protest that we have is like, why are you telling us that this God of beauty has given us so much, and you're cluttering it with so many rules and regulations that take you away? Think about Jesus. What does he do? He sets as an example the child who is pure, who has not been corrupted. To such belong the kingdom of heaven, he says. I'm talking now about all this is not to get into the politics. I know that there's some people that are even claiming that now that this movement or this Occupy movement is in a sense the Tea Party of the Democratic Party. Okay, whatever you want to say. I don't want to get into your politics, but I will approach it from the church point of view, because when you're talking about protest, you're talking about the underlying thread of what we believe here at The Next Step of the In His Shoes movement is all about. And it is based on the protest that was given to us by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You see, Jesus Christ was a revolutionary. Jesus Christ was the first protester. he protested against the establishment. And, well, it cost him his life, right? But in the end, what happened? His love, his dedication, who he was as God incarnate was so intense that he was able to even conquer that death. Now you think about that for a moment. Think about how important it is for you to believe in what you're doing and what you're protesting. We go through this all the time. If you look at some of the works that we've put up in His Shoes, the next step that we talk about, it's always about protesting. It's about protesting, but in a positive manner, because our inspiration is Jesus Christ. You see, there's a lot of people, and I get tired of this too. I'm sure you do too. I especially hear it at clergy conferences. They start talking and they say, oh, the church is this and the church is that. Okay, yeah, that's fine. You know, we can all make lists of things that are wrong with any organization, certainly the church, right? Well, what's the alternative? Are you presenting an alternative? And the real question is not about the church being this entity outside of you, but the church is you. You are part of that church. And so who's taking that next step? You and I have to take that next step. If we're identifying the problem, we definitely need to identify the solution, because we are the solution. There is no church outside of us. The church is the community of believers. And we're seeing things being taken from our hands. The beauty of God's splendor. Well, we talked about it a few minutes ago. Why shouldn't you go into your church and really be able to express yourself wholeheartedly with the breath that God has given you? Because of the regulations that we have? Because people have told us that, okay, you can't wear this, you can't say this, you can't do that. Who says that? Where does it say that? And as people, we are now calling it to task. And of course, I'm talking as an American too, because I certainly recognize that although my church began with a revolutionary, although the entire faith that I have is based on a person who bucked the system, based on somebody who went against the establishment, but I also realized that has been fortified by me being an American, because what was the America? What was the American dream? What was the Declaration of Independence? It was to say, when in the course of human events, things don't turn out the way you want to, you have that right to protest. You have that right to go against the establishment. You have that right to buck the system. And so that's the strength that I get. I recognize that. And why do you think we call this Armadoxy? Because it's not Armenian Orthodoxy in the traditional sense, but it is now flavored. It is an Orthodoxy for today, where it is definitely dunked in this American environment. It is definitely dunked into the entire globalized environment. We're using the means that have been put in front of us, not to alter the message. The message is straight and clear and pure. Love conquers evil. Jesus Christ is the incarnation of love. He conquered evil. His message is in his life. His message is in his work. The message is there. What's changing is the means by which we approach that message. And so it's very, very important for us to understand, when we look at that Occupy movement, that there is a lesson for us. For us to occupy, for us to never be scared of that protest, and realize that it is in that protest that we see movement. Now, this morning I went to a funeral, and what was interesting about this, the funeral, was that this man was, who died, who passed away, was in his early 80s, and he was somebody who was born here in the United States, of parents who had escaped the Armenian genocide. He was born here in the late 1920s. Now you gotta think about somebody who comes here after genocide. What do they have? And yet, well, he creates a life. Not only that, at age 17, 1944, he enlists and gets the approval of his parents to enlist to fight against Hitler, to fight in the United States Army, to fight against that evil menace that was taking over. Now, what is it about that generation of people? I call them God's generation, because that generation really had nothing and created something in this life. Just like what God did, right? He had nothing and he created something. He created life. Think about that generation post-genocide, having nothing and then coming here and creating. And what is it about that generation that was able to look at life and not despair? Look at life and say, okay, I'm going to take it by the horns and I'm going to conquer it. What was it about that generation that said, okay, there is a war and that's my war. It's up to me to go and fight that war. Now, I find it fascinating that here was a generation that pulled its efforts together. They came together and they made a life for themselves. Not depending on others, but depending on the life that God had placed in their souls. Despite the hardships, despite the difficulties, realizing that that breath that was given to them by God was a gift, and they didn't have a right to say no to that gift. They had to accept it.
We were the war children. 1945. You know, the soldiers came marching home. Love looks in the
I'm going to come back after all these bubbles in a few minutes. We're going to continue on this. I hope you're with me.
Today's spiritual bubble is about experiencing grace. I left work early so I could have some uninterrupted study time right before my final in my youth issues class. When I got to class, everybody was doing their last minute studying. The teacher came in and said he'd review with us a little bit just before the test. We went through the review, most of it right on the study guide, but there were some things he was reviewing that I'd never heard of. When questioned about it, he said that they were in the book and we were responsible for everything in the book. We couldn't really argue with that. Finally, it was time to take the test. Leave them face down on the desk until everyone has one, and I'll tell you to start, our professor instructed. When we finally turned them over, every answer on the test was filled in. The bottom of the last page said the following: This is the end of the final exam. All of the answers on your test are correct. You will receive an A on the final exam. The reason you passed this test is because the creator of the test took it for you. All of the work you did in preparation for this test did not help you get the A. You have just experienced grace. Then he went around the room and asked each student individually, What is your grade? Do you deserve the grade you are receiving? How much did all your studying for this exam help you achieve your final grade? Now, I'm not a crier by any stretch of the imagination, but I had to fight back tears when answering those questions and thinking about how the Creator has passed this test for me. The discussion afterward went like this. I have tried to teach you all semester that you are a recipient of grace. I have tried to communicate to you that you need to demonstrate this gift as you work with young people, or with all people. Don't hammer them. They are not the enemy. Help them, for they will carry on your ministry if it is full of grace. Talking about how some of us had probably studied hours and some just a few minutes, but all had received the same grade, he pointed to a story Jesus told in Matthew chapter 20. The owner of a vineyard hired people to work in his field and agreed to pay them a certain amount. Several different times during the day, he hired more workers. When it was time to pay them, they all received the same amount. When the ones who'd been hired first thing in the morning began complaining, the boss said, "Should you be angry because I am kind?" The teacher said he'd never done this kind of final before, and probably would never do it again. But because of the content of many of our class discussions, he felt that we all needed to experience a little bit of grace. This has been your spiritual bubble. May you find the grace in your life and let it float on the wind to heaven.
That is beautiful. Thank you, Ani. Grace. What is grace? That's one of those words like blessing. You know, you use it, but you don't know what it is. By the grace of God. You know, what is grace? Very nicely said. A nice little story to kind of put it in perspective. I appreciate all of these bubbles. They get our minds to wonder and just so perfect. For today, actually, we don't know what the bubble is until we hear the bubble of the day. But somehow it always fits, doesn't it? Yeah, you feel that too, right? I know, it just fits. It just goes right into the flow of things. You know, there are things that we cannot explain until you refer to it as the grace of God. There goes the grace of God. And it's all around us. We really are able to reach to those heights. And think about the discussion we've been having right now. We've been talking about the idea of protest, about the Occupy movement, about how God has given us this gift of life. And really, many times the church takes that away from you by not allowing you to really express it to its fullest. I'm not talking about the church taking away, okay, you've got this grace, and the church says, no, you can't have it. No. But if it doesn't give you the opportunity to really exploit your potential, then what good is it? What good is it? I came so that you might have life and have it abundantly. What is that supposed to mean in your life? That God is just talking? Christ is just speaking about something? Or does it mean that you fully engage? You give yourself? We started off in the very beginning with the story of this hare who lost his spectacles. If you haven't heard that, you gotta watch it. You gotta listen to it. We'll put a link on our show notes, okay? We talked about that. The hare has a spare pair. Think about that for a moment. You have the answers within you. You need to just find them. You have the spare pair. It's in your pocket. But sometimes you forget. Sometimes it's right on top of your head. Have you ever done that? Look for your glasses. You realize they're on top of your head and you don't want to tell anybody. Oops, I can't believe I exposed myself here on this podcast. Now you know I've done that. All right, I'll admit it. Where is my hat? And you look up, it's on your head. You've had it all along, but you've distracted. You're distracted at that moment. You're distracted because the church takes your mind elsewhere. The church gets you to think about, well, which pew should I sit in? Should I turn the page this way because I want to look at the definitions? Should I listen to what they're singing and try to be on tune? Or does it matter what's going up on the altar, what's happening up there? Our minds are being consumed with all this stuff. And yes, there are distractions in our church. That's why I always tell people, go sit up in the front. Yeah, you know, if you sit in the back, which is the most popular seat, this is one of those pre-secrets I'm telling you now. The seat in the back is the popular seat, okay? Everybody goes, sits there. Because that way you could kind of like scan the room, see who's there. See what they're wearing, what they're up to. Well, what does that do to you, folks? It gets your mind off of where your mind should be. That's why I always encourage people, go up right in the front. So that you're focused, you're looking. You're directing yourself to what is important, the presence of God in our lives. He's coming down. He wants to share with you. He's offering himself to you and me. The church has a mission. And you are part of that mission. You are there. And so when you look at these protest movements, you realize that, yes, there is all this protest. And you look at certain people who have risen to the occasion. Like I said, you have this gentleman who passed away this morning. We had his funeral. And it made me think about that generation. What was so special about this generation that came and went to war and really struggled? Well, what was special for them was not that they were preaching Christianity, but they were living Christianity. That's what was special about them. And there's a big difference. Today we have turned Christianity into this instruction. You turn to this podcast, you go and listen to a sermon, you read about it, you read the blogs. And this is what was so exciting the other day when we were doing Compass. Because all of a sudden, and you got to listen to him, I can't impress upon you how important that evolution is. That it wasn't about the rules and regulations. No, it was the natural flow. That if you believe that Jesus Christ is being distributed, what is more important outside of church? What could possibly be out there? And now think about it in the next step way. If the church has this secret and knows this secret which has been kept so, so tight, because it has helped the people that have been part of that church to withstand all kinds and manner of suffering, have allowed the people to rise from the ashes, to rise from even genocide, and has given them the audacity to turn and talk about peace. Yes, in the Armenian Divine Liturgy, the single most used word is peace. Chagharutyun. It is distributed to the people. It is given to the people. Imagine that, a people who have only known war, suffering, genocide, rape, pillage. These people are talking about peace. Well, why? Because these people have been able to tap into something really important. And that's what was so special about that generation. After the genocide, they saw all that difficulty. They saw what was going on. They saw even genocide. But God was in their heart, and it wasn't a questioning God. It was just a firm belief that knowing that they were not alone. And you think about what Christ invites us to. Have faith as the child. That generation after the genocide had faith as a child. Sure, you questioned, but you got over it. You didn't let it be an obstacle to your happiness. And that generation realized that the spare pair was always in their pocket. That where was God? Where was the truth in their life? It was always with them. They didn't need to put their hand out to somebody else because they understood them to be responsible for their own destiny. In so many ways, today, this protest that's going on, the Occupy movement on the streets of the world is about this, about returning back home, returning something that should never have been taken away. So yes, you do protest it because it shouldn't have been taken away, but you need to be able to get over it and say that now it is my turn to take on the responsibility. And sometimes it's so polluted that you can't see that it is the spare pair that you really do have. You see, this is, I've been born and bred in protest. I mean, at age 9 or 7, I think I was, when President Kennedy was shot. And after that, there was a distrust for the government. We started talking about conspiracy. By the time I was in junior high, we heard about Bobby Kennedy being shot. In junior high, we heard about Martin Luther King Jr. being shot and killed. And trust me, the conspiracy theories were out there. Back then, too. The government's doing it. The agents are doing it. They wanted to shut him up. They wanted to do this, blah, 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 blah. Okay? You distrust government. Hey, guess what happened? We got into a war called Vietnam. It was ugly. Nobody understood what it was about. And in the end, we lost. The war was over. And they brought in the corpses in these bags, body bags. And we hated the government. How could they do that? And there was protest on the streets. In schools, there were walkouts. There was burning of effigies, of flags, right in the streets. And then it happened right in a school in Ohio. They shot down four of them. Four students. They shot them down. Called it a massacre. A president, his name was Nixon. And Nixon came out. He was the president, yeah. President of the United States. They found that he was corrupt. They found that he was spying. They found that he was corrupt. So you talk about what happened between the 60s and 70s. There was distrust for everything. And then you had President Ford, Jimmy Carter came into play. And what happened? He lost these people to Iran. And then Ronald Reagan came in. I mean, you talk about protest. That was the time of protest. But it's always about protesting something to talk about what we can get. And look at the protest that Jesus Christ taught us. He said it's within. He says, don't look without. And he displayed that up on the cross. His strength was from within. He hadn't lost anything. He was inviting people back home. In the same way, when we are protesting, when we are occupying the streets, it is your obligation to look within as well. Yes, a lot of it needs to be protest. I just described what I lived through, and you know that we're living through it right now too. I mean, do you think it's healthy right now what we're seeing? We're seeing people struggling. And what did we do just a few years ago? They bailed out. The insurance companies, the banks. I mean, what about bailing out the families? What about allowing people to have homes? Allowing people to have education? What are we talking about? The greatest country in the world? The greatest country, arguably, in human history. And its downfall is what? Is our inability to reach out to the people. Reach out and help. But we're very good about setting up wars, aren't we? We're in Iraq. We're in Afghanistan. The minute anybody seems to get out of place, we're ready with a military response. We've forgotten all about bargaining. We've forgotten all about diplomacy, about talking. Just about, hey, we have military might. Let's show it off. Okay? So with all that, you have every right to protest, and you should be protesting. But at some point, as people, we need to look at that generation who had every reason to protest, but didn't, and found the spare pair on their head, found it in their pocket, found the means to get over within. And as this discussion comes to an end, or should we call it a soliloquy, as I end my soliloquy right now, let's think about it. Look within. Yes, there are times and means by which we need to protest the inequity, the injustice that is all around us. And certainly we do that. But let's also realize that we are part of the solution. That yes, we do protest. That while people are going hungry, banks are getting richer, as people are struggling with their own life situations and medical issues, there are insurances that are bringing in healthy premiums, you know, from all over the place, and paying their shareholders very well. The banks, the credit companies, the insurance companies, yeah, they were all taken care of. And wouldn't it have been nice that the bailout could have been for people in need? But realize that also God is bailing you out right now by giving you an opportunity to take your life in your hands. Don't discount that. Don't discount how powerful that is. That you have that right. You have that responsibility. You have that power. Don't ever believe by protesting that ultimate power is in someone else's hands, someone else's charge. Don't give in to that. Protest where necessary. Be ready to stand up for the injustices that are paid out to other people. But be ready to take on the responsibility that is only and only in your charge.
Oh Lord, I'm running, running for freedom.
Well, we are at the end of today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed producing it. I want to thank you for joining us today. We are on the way to Blog World. We are heading out there. In fact, Ken is over there right now. His sister Hia is engineering today's show. And I know it's just, you can only blame your brother for that room, okay? Don't look at me like that. Anyway, thank you, Hia, for being here. And of course, Ken is over there at Blog World getting things ready. We have been nominated for the People's Choice Award, and I am very excited about that. I've got to tell you, it is 4 years that we've been doing this, and there is an excitement. I know it might be difficult to pick up an award this year. We don't do it for the awards, just the idea that it is recognized, that people are finding some value in this program. It goes a long way, and I really appreciate it. I want to thank you for your prayers and all of your wonderful support, and especially the team that puts this together. Yes, Ken, I know you're going to hear this. You're part of it. And, of course, Susie, our producer, Ani with her wonderful bubbles, and all of you. Please join us at our websites, inissues.org. as well as epostle.net. That's Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic and Expanding Universe. And all the wonderful people who, you know, help us out throughout the week at Epostle. Of course, I'm remembering Lilo, our associate producer on the Bible studies, both the Armenian and the English, the questions in faith. And of course, Linda Zadoyan with her compass. So for the wonderful crew, Susie, Ani, Thea, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.